Apollo's Tiny Nipple should have been the title of this episode.
That really should be it.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 15-61-74.1. Welcome aboard Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she's the gamma that refuses to retire. It's Ambassador Danae.
Hello. I have not retired.
You're still here.
I'm still here.
What would be the difference between a Gamma Quadrant Danae and an Alpha Quadrant Danae? If they were going to go head to head.
So one has been genetically manipulated, if I understand.
They both have, but for different reasons. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Because they both were bred.
Yeah. But the alphas were bred in the alpha quadrant because they can't easily get to the gamma quadrant anymore.
I immediately think about Austin Powers and the robot boobs. Do you know what I mean? That's the first thing that I thought of.
Cold open. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's the first thing I think of.
That's the first augmentation that you would want. Yeah, I like a woman with that caliber.
Exactly.
I like that that's the top of your list.
Yeah. Yeah, I just assume
it's practical.
Well, they were bred for battle and war. Yeah. So,
machine gun boobs. They should have had those.
A robot come onto the scene and then, just guns coming right out of the titties. But that would be one of the versions. The other version is the one that is more of the mind battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What would be in your pocket?
Psychological warfare or something.
What would be in your little trouser pockets that you're so... I can't stop thinking about the gem. I googled a full body image of the Jem'Hadar and the pocket is right there. And there's an app game that has the Jem'Hadar in it and they have the little pocket as well. And it's such a big pocket and I've never seen what goes in there.
They're huge.
Yeah.
The question is what the second evolution is. Gamma quadrant, alpha quadrant, whatever the quadrants are called. And I don't remember.
You got it. Nailed it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the new evolution quadrant needs this pocket. And what is it for?
Yeah. What goes in it? Snacks.
Yeah. I mean, obviously drugs.
Yeah. It's bullets for your boob tubes.
No, because that was the first version. This new version.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Doesn't have boob tubes anymore.
Yeah. But definitely snacks, because that's the first step in any kind of psychological warfare is becoming friends with the person. And snack food is maybe the number one way to someone's heart. Just that Kit Kat bar.
It's a Kit Kat. It would be super dark because they're manipulated by the Ketracel White. So then they would be manipulating the next person down by retaining a snack from them. So it would just be, it would make sense because it's a never ending cycle of have this nice thing and then do things for me or else you don't get the nice thing.
This is how mice learn to run their little...
Yeah.
The little mazes.
Yeah, that's how we run this enterprise. Okay, this week we are going back to the original series with season 2, episode 2, Who Mourns for Adonis? Based on Danae's Mind Palace predictions, your prompts were oranges/fruit.
Right.
Grecian garb is what you came up with.
Mm-hmm.
A courtyard, which was in the outtakes, not in the main show. But I wanted to include it because it was the courtyard is quite apt. And an open hand leading to a mystery/whodunit.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm really nervous because of how the live chat reacted
The live chat got very excited about the open hand.
I think it was more than that because they were. it was something about the
There was
the outdoor garden kind of thing that I saw,
and a lilac dress. You saw a lilac dress as well, which is quite interesting. So I mean,
it's really strange. Yeah. I understand, and it's hard to believe me. And I think we should just move on because it's going to happen every time.
Vulcans never bluff.
Well, my first question before this is: did Spock ever lie?
Yes, 100%.
Okay, well, then he would call it something example.
Else. Yeah.
Oh, what would he call it?
He would say expanding upon the truth or not being entirely forthcoming. He would find a way to mentally reconcile it.
But did he always come clean about it?
Huh?
Did he come clean about it?
Not to the bad guy, because he would only ever lie to the bad guy.
Okay.
And then he would tell Kurt, and then McCoy would be like, Spock, did I detect a lie? He said, no, Doctor, I merely expanded upon the truth as I see it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
well, then I think I'm still in the Spock parameters then.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not deceiving anybody.
No, you're not. You're being more Vulcan than Spock is, and that's saying something. He's actually half human, so that's not difficult. Okay, before we get into the episode, let's do some emails. Okay, Hailing Frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. Couple of corrections from last week, which are always fun to do. Emmanuel, via email, thank you for your email, says, minor fixes, the Defiant was introduced in Season 3. I think I said Season 4 or 5. I couldn't quite remember. But yeah, we were talking about how the Defiant was introduced to kind of give them a bit more mobility and to introduce a little bit more Starfleet into the show. We were talking about Bashir and how he was genetically augmented from birth. And we were talking about when they introduced that. And they introduced it late in the show. But I forgot that Bashir, the character, knew all along. But the actors and the writers didn't decide it until like Season 5 or 6.
Oh.
So the character then has to say, yeah, I knew all along, but I deliberately played dumb so that I wouldn't be exposed. Because suddenly, once he's exposed, he's doing all of these calculations in his head. And like, that's a great reminder, Emmanuel, thank you. But it's like, it's so messed up, because how many people died because he had to play dumb? Like, was there a time when he had the knowledge to fix something or to solve a problem, but couldn't? Because he was hiding. And that's the problem when you retcon things, is that every action he has leading up until that point, you then look at with a different lens. Because it's like, oh, you knew that you were super smart and stronger or whatever.
Right.
But the actor doesn't, and the writers don't. So there's no way they were working that into the story.
Oh, interesting.
And that's why it like angered fans so much. And it angered the actor too.
That makes sense.
It's wild to think about, though, isn't it? Like, it's such a huge retcon to do.
Yeah. And you have to wonder why they decide to do it. Like, the risk of changing something for the art of the story. Like, it must have been really important to them for some reason. Mm-hmm. At least I hope it was, instead of
we want to do this for fun. We've run out of ideas. Yeah, that would suck. Emmanuel finishes the email with, love what you guys are doing. Also, these lighthearted episodes of DS9, even though it's the darkest series and has the darkest episodes, is where Sisko and Kira really shine the most. Yeah, and I think I liked I think the banter didn't hit you quite right, but for like when you've seen the whole show all together, it's fun to see them loosen up and to be a bit more jovial with each other.
Well, that's one thing that we keep seeing over and over again in these episodes. And I kind of like that we almost hit on it regularly, is to us, these are really damaging moments. And to them, it's just a Tuesday afternoon. And
it is.
I kind of forget, like, I'm watching it going, this is really major. But I have to remember that these are people who live in this universe where the things that are happening to them are normal.
This is just totally, you're going to be shrunk. This is for science. Yeah. It's totally normal.
So they're just like laughing about it because somehow they know that engineering is going to do something incredible and they're going to save the day.
Leading on from that, we have a message on the Discords from Josh, who put together this very articulate note that I love. Something I feel that Captain Ian has not explained to the ambassador is that Avery Brooks, the actor who plays Sisko, and this is in regards to you not connecting with Sisko last episode, is that Avery Brooks is from another planet. Anyone who has ever had a conversation with Mr. Brooks can attest to what a truly unique individual he is. He definitely marches to the beat of his own drummer. Avery Brooks doesn't even hear a drum and will march on his hands if he feels like it. I've met him a few times and every time he's just something else. It's like dealing with a person who is on hallucinogens but didn't actually take the drugs. Once he answered a question by smiling, walking off stage, getting a tambourine, and then returning with the tambourine, pounding on it while spinning, and then saying, next? Question mark. And by the way, the question was something normal for a Star Trek convention audience, not can you smile and go get a tambourine and spin around. His personality brings a lot of nuance to the character of Sisko, but some poor soul definitely had to rein him in. But much of his true nature is an untethered being bleeds in through Sisko. And I can attest to that, having met him as well. He is a space cadet in the best way possible. This man, it has already evolved to whatever the next plane of existence humans go to. He's already there and is slumming it with us, in his off hours. Like, he is watching him as Cisco as a human being is so interesting when Avery Brooks is not a human being. Like, we should watch an interview of him together and you'll get what I mean. Yeah,
that's interesting. Because there are some personalities that, you know, you're hired for something because you have a quirky personality.
Yeah, you don't have to act much. It's not a big reach.
Right. Which, if that's the case, then I think that might be part of the charm of watching Cisco.
Mm-hmm.
And I did evolve a bit as the show progressed, or as our show progressed, mm-hmm. and I was kind of digesting more.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we had a good talk about why he's acting the way he's acting.
There's such an amount of bravery in doing the show this way, because it's just the gut reaction versus the thoughtful, like, I've had 2 days to do research and
no one
I've
was coming
blogs.
At you. Yeah, no one was coming at you saying, you're a dick. But that is
it wasn't
good...
quite as bad as hating on Jadzia.
That was a big one. Yeah, but you deserve that. But this is some really important context, because I think Avery Brooks might be the best actor ever, because Cisco is not, it, from what I've seen, is not him. Like, it's a really interesting performance. And then one final email from Rima78. This was just to say that the Rima actually sent in some measurements and schematics of the Captain Kirk's Enterprise compared to the Defiant, because I said off the top of my head that the Defiant is roughly the same size as the saucer section of Captain Kirk's Enterprise, and I was right. I was off by about 5 meters.
Wow.
So thank you, Rima, for making me feel incredible about that off-the-cuff gut instinct comparison in size. That probably doesn't matter, because I don't think you really know how big Kirk's Enterprise is compared to anything else. But
No. But you're doing this show in front of other super fans.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. I get to be like, I don't know, you know, but you have to... You gotta come to the table like prepared.
Yeah, and I love that the message came in, and I was like, wait, does this mean I was right? And I'm like, you're off by about 10 meters, but that's okay.
That's forgivable.
I love that. Well, we love hearing your emails. We love getting your corrections. Thank you for sending in your stuff. We still have a backlog that we haven't got through yet. So if you haven't heard your email, do not worry. It will appear on a future episode. But yeah, send in anything you like, any questions to captainspot@cinemasins.com. Or the other best place is on discord.gg/cinemasins. Okay, Ambassador, with that, you ready to watch some TOS?
I'm ready, Captain.
I'm going to be watching you for one particular moment that appears and just watch your mind be blown. We'll see you in 10 forward for a full debrief as we head over to the holodeck to watch Season 2, Episode 2 of the original series, Who Mourns for Adonis? 2 to beam out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what would you like before you tell me how much you hated this episode?
Yeah, let's just go with some ambrosia.
Oh, some ambrosia? Nice. I want some awkward 60s stereotypes, please. hey, Danae, at what point are you going to leave this Enterprise? And then I'm just going to lose an officer because you found a man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Give us a synopsis. Please be kind.
This was not what I was expecting.
No, I honestly forgot everything about this episode other than the Green Hand and Apollo. I remember nothing. I remember the courtyard, Apollo, yep. Great performance from Apollo, Green Hand, done. It, nothing. And this opens rough. Rough.
Yeah, we're going to get into the uncomfortable, the good, the bad. I think the synopsis is that the Enterprise is captured by a being that has already encountered human civilization on Earth 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And one remains of choice named Apollo, who has been sitting on this planet just waiting for humans to come across him at some point in the future, and has just been hoping someday to have worshippers and
get some faith
and
juice.
He forces he's attempting to force them to love him through exerting dominance, even unto the only female that they brought along on their away team.
Yeah, he could have fallen in love with Kirk.
And then they break free by destroying the source of Apollo's power and are able to escape the dominating Apollo, who the show wants us to believe is somehow a potentially redeemable, loving father figure.
I mean, I could make a point. I could make an argument. Yeah, the crux of the episode is humans have evolved beyond their gods, and the last holdout to that idea is Apollo, who has been waiting on Pollux for the eventual
arrival
time that humans will find him. Yeah, exactly. So, overall thoughts and feelings about this episode. Did you have a good time? I'm pretty sure you did not, but was there anything redeeming from it that you could take away?
There's always going to be a downshift in pacing because...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This episode is... I don't like Apollo, the character, right? Like the one that we just saw.
I don't think we're supposed to.
Don't like him.
Nope.
And he dominates the screen. And he is...
Literally.
Repetitive... there's not really like an evolution of his character. It's just love me, fear me, love me, fear me, love me, fear me, but indifferent. He just says it over and over again. So if you have a pie chart, a bigger portion of this episode is Apollo talking about his need to be adored.
Yeah.
And I didn't enjoy his character.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think it's an interesting idea to have an alien species that came across Earth 5,000 years ago, and that the entire like Greek history is based on an actual physical like relationship with these gods. Now, I have to say, it was really interesting to watch this, having been being a Lore Olympus fan, and I think I've talked about this before, but it's been a long time, so I just want to take a quick moment. So, Lore Olympus is a webcomic series that is on the app Webtoon, and I followed it from the first time it launched, and it's just wrapped up. It's done now.
Oh, it's finished. Oh, that's it. I've heard you talk about this for years.
It's a really, really fascinating look at specifically Hades and Persephone's relationship. That's kind of like... through the lens of those two. And Apollo is in, obviously, this one, because Apollo plays a role. And it's really interesting because all these different mythologies, there's different kind of versions in a way. But the fans of Lore Olympus in the comment section, anytime a new character would pop up, would be like, oh, I know what's about to happen, you know, because
they get
these
it.
Stories
yeah.
have been written. But it's the author is Rachel Smith or Smythe. And she is, I'm sure she's taking some creative license with the storytelling. The art is fantastic. And I could talk about this particular series for far too long, and that's not why we're here. So I'll kind of move forward. But because I have been in Lore Olympus brain for years, literally every week rushing to see what the next episode is going to be, I fucking hate Apollo. I hate him. Like he.
Wait, this version or in general?
Just,
all versions
Lore Olympus,
of Apollo.
Like
right.
any kind of before Lore Olympus, it was like, oh, Apollo, he's some god.
Yeah, he's a god. Fine.
But seeing him here and
that's
the representation of his character here, I am triggered.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's so interesting. I couldn't have predicted that.
Yeah.
That's
because
so interesting.
Apollo, you know, the whole idea of gods, and not it was not just Apollo, like Zeus and all of these gods, they took women. They were their plaything. Humans were their playthings, essentially.
Lucky human, you get to be with me. You should be thankful.
So this was us watching like manipulation happening, and that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah, super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But for me, it's extra uncomfortable how quickly Lieutenant Carolyn goes along with it. Like, I think that's the weakest part of the episode for me is she is immediately all in, which does no service to womankind. She's just, I love him. I'm in. This is amazing. How could I say no to this man? Kirk's weak-ass argument happens, and it works, and she turns and is like, oh, yeah, no, I'm a human. Screw you. That's fine. Like, I'll sacrifice for my crew. And then she's sobbing. All in the space of, like, an hour.
It's interesting.
Like, that's the weakest bit for me. I don't buy any part of her character.
But you say that, you know, it's not really doing a service to womankind. But in this era, what did we expect her to do? Because women were designed in our social structures to be submissive. Like if we had put,
no, you're not wrong
if we
at
had
all.
Put Danae in that moment, I'd be like,
hell yeah.
Let me just play into this for a minute. I'll be right back with his balls in my hand. Not the good way. Like the it takes 5 pounds of pressure to twist and pull them off kind of a way, right? Like I would go in.
God,
just give me a minute. I'm going to let this go a little further. And that way I can get close and just rip this thing out of his chest. Like I would be.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. The God organ.
You know, but she, I didn't know what she was doing at first. I thought maybe she was going along with it because she was going to be gathering information. But when she
Kirk seems to think that as well.
Yeah. When she comes back and she's like, I'm in love. I got the impression that maybe they were like kissing a little bit at first and then he promises her this goddesshood and maybe that's whenever they have sex and then she's just like...
Maybe.
Like, you know, he could have used his powers to make it real, real good and just kind of fucked her brain up. We've all had really...
It's all happened.
Let me just say this. Again, this is not a kids podcast.
Please stop listening.
The hope is that in your lifespan, you would have had great sex at least once. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of make you do stupid shit sometimes.
Soupy brain.
Yeah, you get soupy brain. That's a great way to put it. There you go. And so she comes out in the state and I'm like, I've been there before. I know that face. And it's also hard because I understand too that she's like, oh, he's nice. There's something that's redeemable about this character, this person. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, let's just like see how this goes. But it's such an extreme because what he wants is to dominate, destroy their ship, take all of their people down to the planet. Hey, go get your crew, bring them all over with their shovels. We're starting over from scratch. Like, you're going to love me as a god. And
it's such a selfish thing because there's nothing in it for the crew. Like, he thinks that his love for them will be enough.
Right. Yeah.
That's satisfying enough
for the crew.
Because
Apollo is delusional.
Yeah.
So it is hard for me to kind of go, oh, was it a hard, like, was it a stretch for her? So she was just, I feel like in that moment, like, tugged back and forth between, is there a way to save us all? Kind of a vibe. And Kirk rightfully is like, pull your shit together. Like, we're going to be slaves if you give him the ability to make us slaves.
Just met.
And what I liked is that the next scene with them, she didn't say, I'm a human. She said, I'm a scientist.
Yes,
and I
liked
that
part. I wish that had been her plan all along.
I do too.
And I know that robs some power from Kirk, but fuck him. Like that, fine. Like he'll have other moments. Like, but that clearly wasn't her plan from the beginning. So it's such a big swing to go from love, 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 love to I'm a scientist, which is like that's kind of where I would like her to be.
Yeah.
In this situation, like that is her specialty, but she immediately falls. Quote unquote, falls in love.
I don't think that there is a way for the writers to have given her that power when this was created. I think this is their attempt at giving her some authority. Like we even saw her save the day and inadvertently undermining the captain's plan, you know, by saying like, no, please don't hurt everybody. Like a father wouldn't hurt his children, you know, stop. And the captain's just like, God damn it, Caroline.
Shit. I wanted one of us to get
Caroline,
her.
Caroline, whatever.
Caroline. Palamas.
Yeah. So I mean, her whole thing was uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. This is an uncomfortable episode, but it kicks off from the very beginning uncomfortably. Like for me, maybe I can understand like you're face to face with a god. He's talking cool and
he has mind powers.
He has powers and maybe you think like, okay, I'll be the goddess and maybe I'll help save everybody by taking on this role. Maybe she kind of just was in her own head as some sort of like captive because she was captive. But it starts off with a man saying, you look a bit tired. You know, so right at the beginning of this episode, we have some things that's just like, man, I'm so glad times have changed. But it's hard to watch what women are portrayed as in TOS, and it always will be.
It really is.
But it is. It's part of our American history.
It really is, and English history as well. That cold open gets from awkward to worse to holy shit! I want to change the episode that we're watching because
it was
McCoy
uncomfortable.
Does the "you look tired" thing, and they do say that to men as well, but it has a different connotation when you present it to the only woman, or one of the only two women on the bridge. Like, the way there is a more patronizing tone to it. And I want to be as kind as possible, because there's a chance that this scene is written deliberately over the top because of what's coming next in the rest of the episode. Like, this wasn't a throwaway conversational thing. The focus is on Carolyn because of the role that she has to play later on in the episode as well. So McCoy, Scotty seduces her and they agree to go for coffee. McCoy says, well, this happens to all of the women in the service. Eventually, they find a man, they get pregnant, and then we lose an officer. And Kirk's like, yeah, I'm going to lose an officer. Doesn't it suck that women fall in love and get pregnant? And that
I mean, they didn't say it quite like that, but that's what they were saying.
Those are the exact words that I heard. And all of that, like, that just isn't a random throwaway cold open. That ties into, oh, they're actually going to lose Carolyn because she finds the ultimate man and falls in love. Yeah. So I have maybe 1% forgiveness because it's relevant to the episode, but 99% of me is, it's such a stereotype.
It's really
to play into. It's so stereotypical and not at all the case.
Right.
That was the perception. It's like, this is why we don't have women in the workplace, because they're going to get pregnant and it's unreliable. Like,
there was also the line, like, on the other hand, she's a woman.
And she's all woman.
And it's just like, wow.
Wow.
Wow. So, I don't know. It was very degrading. And then at the same, like,
yes.
Or even just like, come along, dear.
It goes against, for me, what Star Trek is it at its heart, which is equality and opportunity for everybody and give everybody a chance. And we've evolved in the future at this point to be not blind to that in as much as what it allows you to do. Like, you remember the history and where we came from, but everybody has the opportunity to do what anybody wants to do. And even Kirk's argument, where he's like, you're a human and we're always going to be human, that doesn't feel very Star Trek. Because what about Spock's parents, who is a human and a Vulcan? Like, it isn't about being human. It's about being a living organism. Like, that's the thing that you should respect. Like, that's not the argument he should be making against them being together. It should be that you are being manipulated right now by a very powerful creature. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if you're human, Vulcan, Klingon.
Right.
Like, you are being manipulated. And the consequence of that is going to be all of your colleagues being enslaved.
And another way that they kind of telegraph that Carolyn is really susceptible to this ruse is, like, when he changes her clothes, she doesn't go, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
She
permission,
says,
please.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, she just immediately really enjoys her clothing, even though he just said, you seem wise for a woman. And it's like, wow. Like,
wow.
Like, we are just lesser beings and we're just grateful to be on screen. And that is just kind of how it is. But you're right. The tone of Star Trek that we hear and we hope for and we see now more boldly in our content, thankfully, is a representation of race, religion, sexual orientation, and, you know, and all of it. All of it's there. We're able to kind of see more representation, which is nice. But Kirk has a moment with her towards the end whenever he, you know, gets her back on their side, where he does talk about equality. And so it's like, it's in there, and it's in there enough that I feel like the show thinks that it's redeemed itself. But the damage is done. The little girl watching this when this came out,
shouldn't be,
is watching it going, oh, so if a man says, worship me and I'll make you my goddess, even though I'm a scientist, if I have pretty clothes, I should go along with it, right? Like, there's
it
just,
kind of does.
Yeah.
Because I buy that Apollo is saying that, because as much as we're being a bit judgmental about how stuff was in the 60s, which, like, Star Trek was doing the best that it could.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cultural stuff is going to evolve.
Yes.
That's where they were at in the 60s.
Right.
Apollo is 5,000 years before that. So I'm not even judging Apollo for having that point of view, because from his perspective as his god species, the humans were pets. And that is how they saw men, women, everybody. But it's her reaction that's damaging.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Like, it's her reaction to it, not saying, oh, wow, I'm glad I don't live in those times anymore. She just is along for the ride in the pretty dress.
And when we, and we'll get to the next, like, other stuff here, too. Like, it's not, there's more to talk about that wasn't horrible. But this is, I mean, this was the hardest part, I feel, of this show. When we do get to the part where she is standing up for him, because of how they've placed her on the screen and they've showed us her story, I don't know if I believe that she is saying that I can't love you any more than I would love a new species of bacteria, which is a great slam if she believed it. I just don't know if she had,
and
like,
I don't think she does.
The show didn't telegraph that to us very well, in that if there was an aha moment with Kirk, it was played reluctantly, as if it was like, okay, I guess I'll go tell my new sex buddy that I can't be his plaything anymore, you know, instead of it being...
There's nothing that Apollo does to push her that way. It's all based on Kirk's pretty flimsy speech. And that seems to be all that we...
Right.
That's enough for her to suddenly change.
Yeah. And maybe it was. And it's just like, it wasn't enough for me to think, okay, she's on board, you know? And then we do see her like in this danger situation where he imposes himself on her, which I don't know if that was meant to be like an assault on her. Obviously, it's a physical assault on her, but it looked like it was also like mental and emotional. And it was this part of this dominating, like his whole thing is, I'm going to discipline you until you love me. That's his whole thing.
Yes.
So,
and I'm going to get big.
That moment that he, you know, grows in size and then calls forth the storm sort of before the end, like the big climax of this one. Even that, when she comes out of it, it's played just like you would expect in TOS times, of this kind of just like damsel in distress.
Scotty to the rescue.
Yeah, Scotty, let me help you lay your head down on this rock, my dear. And I just didn't buy what her role was in it. We don't even see her, you know, there's not like a moment where she's back on the Enterprise, like back in her
Never
power
see her again.
As a scientist going like, hey, thank you for helping me, you know, break out of that spell, or anything that kind of gave us an indication that she wasn't fully aware of her choices. So
yeah,
very, very interesting episode. When you think about how this woman is portrayed, how her choices are portrayed, and putting her in that opposite role of Apollo, this dominating god, you know, it was really uncomfortable, but interesting.
I would love to be in the writer's room for it. Like, what was the goal with Carolyn? Like, what were they trying to say with her character? Was it the weakness of women? Was it that she has the ability to choose? Like, what was the story you were trying to put across? Or was it just to make Kirk look really clever? Because Kirk is the most like logical and kind of relatable character in this whole episode. He's keeping Scotty in check. He has the breakthrough about maybe this is Apollo. Let's not dismiss it. Maybe he is a god as we would perceive it back then. And he talks Carolyn through what's happening and comes up with the final plan. Like, he's our kind of moral center. And I just would love to know what the intent was.
Yeah.
For her. What are you trying to tell us with her?
How different is this episode if the away team didn't bring a woman? Because Apollo didn't ask for a woman to come down. They just happened to bring her because, well, plot convenience. But so like, what is this episode if they had gone down without a woman that would have attracted Apollo? You know, because that's, I mean, what is it saying about men? You know, that they see a woman and then their plans are gone. So it's not just an assault on women. It truly is this like approach to how men and women interact that makes me uncomfortable, because I know that it's a trope for a reason, you know. I don't know. There's just so much that's occurred, and I don't really want to go obviously into all of the details of it, but this is a glimpse of what the writers felt like the episode needed. And I think that that's really interesting, that they're like, okay, so Apollo is going to be tempted by this woman and she's going to be his downfall.
Yeah, right. But, Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm, she's going to be his downfall, but she's not going to get there on her own. She has to get there because of the man's idea. And
that extra organ was a rib.
She's going to, yeah, exactly. She's going to go along with it, but, you know, she really loves him. But you know what? She's okay. She wants to, you know, serve her captain. And none of it was really her own agency. And that was hard to watch for me.
I love the I'm a scientist line, but you're right. It doesn't save much.
It doesn't mean that she had agency. It kind of, I don't know. Anyway.
What's interesting is, you just tweaked my brain about this, is that Kirk's plan, if she's not there on the away mission, his plan is maybe you kill three of us, but one of us and the crew will survive if we take you out. So it's muscle, it's brawn. The female plan is heart and appealing to this fatherly, motherly vibe. And that's the dichotomy between the two. And that's the trope, isn't it? That the men are all brains and muscle, yeah. And then the women are more nurture. And she nurtures a solution out of him and then takes that nurture away.
I mean, I think ultimately the idea, again, of this like alien species is really interesting, and that's fun.
Yeah.
But also the show does this strange thing at the end where it attempts to, and I'm going to use the word humanize, Apollo. And kind of like he cries and we're feeling bad. I didn't feel bad for him at all. But like, I think the show is wanting to telegraph that, like, oh, you know, sometimes people do bad things for a good reason. And
yeah.
And then it ends with Kirk kind of basically going, I guess we could have gotten him some leaves and maybe.
Could we have maybe killed a single tear? Would it have hurt us to gather a few laurel leaves?
Like, they gave so much. What we had in our golden age was, yeah. It all came from a place of worship. Would it have hurt us to gather a few laurel leaves? And the answer is yes, would have hurt. Because
that's not what he wanted.
Yeah, he didn't want a few laurel leaves.
All of them, forever, all time.
Any sign of submission to this alien creature that wants to enslave you.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that Kirk was trying to like fight his way back. I liked that he was standing up to him. It was curious. And let's talk about that. Yeah. Like, yeah. This alien creature's powers. Let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's the most interesting part of the episode for me, that the gods came from an alien species. Because for me, that's very appealing. Like, if all of our stuff, all of our stories, Bibles, religious texts, if they all come from factual events, which they don't have to, it's interesting that it was an alien species that visited us, appeared to be gods, and then left. And trying to put some science behind his powers, they do a really fun job of explaining why he's the only god left and what happened to the other gods. They basically gave up waiting to be worshipped and ascended to live their lives differently, and Apollo is the last remaining holdout. Like, I think that's really interesting, and it's I love to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, I mean, I do have my own like personal beliefs, and like, Kirk even says like, we don't need lots of gods, we only need one. I was like, oh there's man. The Christian line.
There we go. That hurt me so much.
I looked over at you and I was like, oh, how did that feel?
It's such a product of the 60s, yeah. But listening to it today feels so contradictory, because I was like, we don't need gods, we've moved beyond them. We only need one.
It's just the one.
But I do like that they say Scotty doesn't believe in gods. So there is like an acknowledgement that like, I'm fine that humans still believe in a god or whatever happens in the 2400s. It's nice that Scotty is there as well, like, as the atheist. Yeah. Like, it's interesting.
I really wasn't thinking about my own belief system in this. I was mostly thinking about like this alien, because we have a physical being that can also teleport or shift into a different, I couldn't tell if they were going into a different realm or if he was just moving them on to a different part of the planet.
Yeah, I think it's that.
But I think it was moving.
It's just basically a transporter.
Because she kind of walked back. So he's teleporting. He says he can create life and death. He says he can create whatever he wants. He has a different organ in his body. Actually, my favorite part of this episode is when they first land. And he's like talking all this like Olympian jargon. Mm-hmm. Oh, thus thou have come to worship me. Like, he's doing all this stuff. And then just cuts over to Bones, I think.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of like scanning. He's like, brruh, brruh, brruh.
It's like, keep talking. This is great.
Yeah, it was so great because he was so he wasn't fazed by it at all. He wasn't really like listening. He was just like, okay, this is an interesting reading. You know?
Yeah. And this is weird.
It did that like 3 times, I think, just enough for me to know that I think the show knew that it was being funny, because that was the only humor I found in this entire episode.
Oh, 100%. Even the little bit of banter with like Kirk and Chekhov. I'm like, how old are you? I'm 22. I should handle this.
Right.
All of that just felt really patronizing as well.
Yeah. But the alien part was really curious. That, no, it had to have a source of power. So then they had to have built it, because they once did it on Earth. So this structure, it's not like that structure came on this planet. So
yeah, they had to build it there.
Yeah, so they built this sort of power thing that can like emanate in a pulse faction, and then through his organ, he can channel it. Mm-hmm. Like, that sounds pretty cool. Like, this is
it's really cool. It's a cool bit of logic for how the gods work.
This is on the border of what I would consider a creature episode. Just like an evil, weird creature that you don't expect. And
yeah.
We recently were watching TNG, and there was another one that I was like, this is a creature episode. And it's when Riker and some of the crew are
being... Yeah, it was schisms. They're all being kidnapped.
Yeah, they're being abducted into this other, like, teeny tiny little... Yeah, and then they go into the...
With the ticks.
The holodeck, and then they recreate the, like, little... Like the,
we've been in this room before. We all have.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the little pincers.
So I would put this one in, like, the middle ground area, because this is... A creature. This is not a
it's an
human
alien creature.
Yeah, and he is scary. Now he looks like a human, but they even said that he could change his form early on. Like Kirk kind of alluded to that.
And McCoy was like, "He looks human, but what does that mean? Like, we see human-looking aliens all the time,
right?" Exactly.
Depends what the makeup department wants to do that week.
That's what I liked about this episode. Let's talk about that. I liked that they were attempting to keep it in the scientific realm, where we're talking about the biology of this creature, we're talking about its powers, we're talking about, like, sort of like, we've seen this kind of thing before. He could call forth, you know, lightning, but he could also choke you out, like, force style.
Yeah.
And he just obliterated their phasers, stopped their communications. He was holding on to a ship. Like, this was a very powerful alien. And his downfall was that he wanted someone to, like, pander to his ego all day long. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he has a limit. Like, there is a limit to his powers, which is, like, Q, as far as I know, has no limit. It's more interesting for me when I can still believe he's a god in comparison to, like, what humans can do,
right,
like, without any kind of support or a ship behind us. But he has a limit to his powers, like, at telling the Enterprise to stop and firing lightning up to it wiped him out. He couldn't, there was a limit to what he could do.
Right.
And I love the science behind, okay, what would a god actually look like? How could they still be godlike but still have some limitations to them as well?
And I thought that the cinematography to kind of build up the tension was really good too.
That finale is great.
It was really intense.
The score, him shouting stop, like, I bought that. Like, that made me feel things at the end. That's a really good finale.
I did too. And I even when they were reflecting, so he Apollo had already kind of given up the ghost and gone transparent forever, I guess. I don't know. And
take me.
And
take
then
me, Zeus.
Our crew is standing in the rubble going, God, I kind of wish we didn't have to do that. And
I like that thought.
I do too. The idea that to survive we had to ruin something.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be great if there was another way? But
diplomacy was clearly not an option.
No, because he had said that once the crew comes down, he was going to squish the ship. And you kind of believe that he would do it, too, because he was fucking crazy.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
He was crazy.
I think that leads nicely onto Michael Forrest, who is the actor that played Apollo. I think he's great. Whatever you think of Apollo, he is incredible in this episode. Like, I buy him as a god.
Me too.
His like Greek delivery of stuff was great. His passion at the end when he's throwing those lightning bolts up. His little tear, which may or may not be real,
I don't care.
But the emotion
good.
He was portraying was still great. Take me back, Zeus. I'm sorry, my friends. I fucked this up. Michael Forrest is the highlight of this episode. He's so good as Apollo. I kind of wish they'd brought him back in like one of the movies as I'm back. I brought the gods with me. I'm pissed. That's a great movie.
Man.
Let's do that.
Yeah, I didn't, like I said earlier, I'm not going to repeat myself too much. I just felt like the dialogue was wash, rinse, repeat.
Yes.
It didn't really go deeper than him.
No.
You know, his weakness was that he was horny and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Horny for faith. And actual horny. Yeah, it's one of the episodes that would be better as 35 to 40 minutes. Like, there's 15 minutes of repeat dialogue. There's an entire, like, there's scenes that could just be cut from this because there's Scotty getting beaten up again. Like, that's, we get it. Like, you're not going to convince him and he's not going to convince the crew to stay behind.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, like, I do like his performance, but this is an uncomfortable one. I can't imagine who I would recommend this episode to. And I keep kind of coming back to that in my mind. Aside from going into this thinking that this is a nasty creature, like, we're going to watch a really disturbing creature. Like, that would be the only reason I feel... And I'm curious if the audience, like if you guys listening at home, you know, you're like, oh, this is who I would recommend this to. It's sometimes it's a good idea to go back and watch stuff that makes you feel uncomfortable and kind of, you know, ask questions. But even at the end, he's so manipulative that after hurting everybody, choking them out, trying to kill them, threatening their lives, forcing himself onto people and physically, emotionally, he makes her feel worse by saying, I loved you and I would have made a goddess out of you and I opened my heart to you. Look what you've done to me.
Yeah.
And as someone who has been in emotionally manipulative mm-hmm. relationships before, that kind of shit is the kind of stuff that you like, you can't argue with someone like Apollo.
No, he's already lost and he's still
trying to hurt you.
Like, there's nothing to gain. This is just to hurt her.
Exactly. And that's the thing that's weird about this episode is that, yes, it's a great performance, but it's like when you watch something in a movie and you're like, ooh, that kid's a little too close to home. I've been in too many up relationships to appreciate that kind of a person. But I do agree that he did a great job of acting.
Mm. And he does make a return in, there's a fan series called Star Trek Continues, which is like borderline between fan made and actually approved by Paramount. Like they were before a lot of like the fan guidelines came into place, and the same actor actually returns. I think this is in the noughts they made this, and he returns in a follow-up episode, which is quite interesting.
I think before we move on to, I want to say like what I enjoyed about the Enterprise in this episode.
Oh, please. I was not moving on until we talked about the Green Hand.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Green Hand first and then talk about the Enterprise.
This is one of the most iconic images in all of TOS history. That Green Hand holding the Enterprise. Like, it's just such a bizarre image and it's so great. And like, people cosplay at it at conventions pretty much every year.
It's funny.
It's such a fun image. And the way the crew reacts to it as well is perfect. It's not like this is Tuesday. This is weird, guys. That's a hand.
And it's coming. That's a hand off coming the planet, at the ship. Getting closer.
Yes. It's going to grab us. And it does. It just, boop, just grabs his little hand. Like it's me getting a new Starship model. Like, there we go. This is mine now. It's so great. I love it. It's so memorable.
Yeah, that was really fun. I mean, the graphics in this one were interesting. Like, you've got the lightning going on. You've got Apollo sort of transparently getting, like, that scene at the end where he's, like, transparent against the background just to kind of show his power. You had him in space, just his head in space. That was an interesting graphic. You had him growing in size, which was fun.
Really well done.
That was really clever because really cool. You know, the camera pans up and they're looking up at the camera and you're like, whoa, he's growing, huh? And then, we're just looking right up his golden skirt and he's this huge, huge god. So
massive god dog.
The graphics are really, really fun in this one.
It's really great. We were watching the remastered version. So I'm showing you a picture right now, which is the original image that it would look like.
Was it black and white?
No, there is some color in there, but it doesn't pop anywhere near as much as the remastered version.
It doesn't even show.
That might be a better image, actually. Yeah.
Is that the original or?
That's the original, and this is the new one that we saw.
Oh, okay. Go back to the. That's interesting.
So that's what the hand looked like. Literally a human hand.
So did you notice? And this might have been the remastered. I'm not sure, but when they were eventually able to fire phasers, it actually they took out part of the hand so that the phasers had a clear path. That was really clever.
Yeah, really, really clever.
I don't know if they did that in the original or not.
I don't know if that's in the original.
I doubt it, but...
And when he's when the Enterprise is destroying the Apollo's Parthenon thing, that's what it looks like in the new one. And then this is what it looked like originally.
Oh my God, that's so different. Look at that. Okay, so in the original, it is just the pavilion.
Yeah.
And then two red highlight markers squeegeed down, just touching it. It just looks like somebody drew on the screen.
Yeah, but then a felt tip pen.
In the one we did, it was very different. It was bright lights with a shining edge, and then the pavilion slowly got red as it heated up.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so different.
Really interesting.
I feel lucky to watch the remastered. Changes. I wonder how I'd feel about it if I wasn't watching the remastered.
I wish we were watching the OG, honestly. I really do. Like, there's something in my brain that breaks a bit when I see this more updated Green Hand.
It's fun, though.
Versus the janky, glowy one from the OG.
But what a cool thing, because, you know, I think you want to make it somewhat interesting. And it's not so over the top that I would feel that it's taking away from the original series.
No, I don't think you would have known had I not told you, which I think is kind of a gift, actually. It's kind of good. Yeah.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the Enterprise in this one. There's so much to enjoy. Spock is in the captain's chair.
Yeah, he is. He's in charge.
He's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like,
he's great when he's in charge. I love it.
He has this mega clipboard.
Yeah. Oh, it's big. And yeah.
When he tells the blue-eyed guy.
Oh, Riley. It's Lieutenant Riley.
To take his calculations to some nuclear place.
Yeah.
That was so
fun. Get
them
M-rays.
The difference in technobabble is super fun.
Deep.
I love
it. Deep. You did? Good.
Oh, I love it. Because like saying nuclear was a big deal. And it still is, but it's less. Like now we're like, oh my God, that meal was nuclear. You know?
Yeah. In the 60s, it's like, that's the thing that ended the war 15 years ago.
Yeah. Like, it's still too soon.
Yeah, exactly.
But that was really fun. But
20.
He just has this commanding, like, scientific approach, and it's so direct. And that moment with Uhura, when we see her inside the guts of the machine with all of these different, like, systems.
Little sonic screwdriver.
Yeah. And she's just in there, and we're, like, so close up. I have such a perfect vision of how she did her eye makeup. It's great. I love it.
Yes.
Like, I can see the cat eye.
That's what you take away from that moment.
Oh, it was
as
so
well.
Great. I was like, oh my God, she's so fucking beautiful. Like,
she's amazing.
She is so beautiful. And to be that close to the camera means I just have a chance to see, like, I don't know, just this. It's such a different. I saw her on top of the console because she was basically like trying to fix something and she's like sitting on it. That's usually
who
she
is. Underneath it, she's in it.
But this time it was like, that's your face. It's right there. And then you have like Spock's face just kind of pop in like, hey, how's it going? I'm going to need you to hurry up. And just like, this is delicate
work.
And when he said, there's no one better suited to do this work than you. Oh, it made my heart so happy.
Like, just in this compassionate leadership role as well. Like, this is a seasoned officer. Like, he's giving encouragement at the right times. This isn't about giving us the evolution of Spock. This is a man that is doing his job as he knows to do it. And like, this is a crew that is listening to him and he knows what to say at the right time. Like, it's so fun to see Spock in that position. And I was going to mention this earlier, but it didn't slip in at the right time. All of the stuff we said about Carolyn's character, it's juxtaposed by Uhura being in this engineer position where she's like, I'm in the guts of the ship, I'm going to get this right. And Spock's like, you're the perfect person for the job, get it done. And she's like, I'm going to get it done. I haven't done this in a while, but I'm going to figure it out. It's amazing. But it breaks my brain because I'm like, you knew what you were doing.
I'm glad it's there. I'm so glad it's there.
I want more of it.
I do too.
It's so strange to have the Carolyn stuff with Uhura just being like, you're not a woman, you're a person.
After we watch this episode, like, you need to go in for a dose of Strange New Worlds because it's the old school vibe with new writing and really well thought out female characters that are allowed to be all of the things that women are. There's emotion and there's creativity and there's directness and there's confidence and it's not overplayed. I also, like, there's a way to overswing and overcompensate, but I don't feel like that happens in Strange New Worlds. And I miss that show because there's like a real place that in my heart watching that one because it's the most recent, you know, show that I've seen. I mean, we watched Discovery and obviously there's a captain in the chair and that's nice. And I did see Janeway as well. But I really like how the women are portrayed in Strange New Worlds. I don't know. It's a good balance.
It feels like a good balance.
That vibe. But I was really pleased that this episode had, like you said, it is jarring, but to not question Uhura, because Spock could have said, do better. He could have said, go faster. He could have
said, should I get Riley to take over?
Right. Like, why don't you know? He could have questioned her. But instead, he says, I trust you. By not saying anything at all, that's him showing his support. And she does. She gets it done. Then she gets to go back down and stick the A-track player into the little boppy machine and push the buttons. And that's the other thing I want to talk about, please, just real quick.
Let's do it. Go. What do you love?
All of the sounds on this ship are just so delightful.
This is what I've been saying. Yes. They're great.
They don't just beep, boop, boop. They clunk, clunk, clunk. Like, there is a depth to when...
Yes.
What's his name that...
Sulu. Firing the phasers.
It's not just...
Click!
Or when he's trying to, like, ramming speed.
Yes!
Those buttons...
Accelerate, go backwards. Yes.
I don't know where click, they exist click, in click. The real world. Like, it's a mechanical button.
Yes. Like, the ultimate fidget cube.
Like, clonk, clonk, clonk. And I'm so glad that the microphone was so good
in there
that we get to hear it, because we can hear Kirk step onto carpet with the microphone. Yes. So yep. Those buttons were just like, I was giggling, and that so
oh, it's so great.
I was happy with like the funny, you know, Scotty was down there scanning when Apollo, like that just cracked. That was a fun humor moment. But like I was delighted by again seeing all like the little buttons, and they're just like pressing them and moving them, and
they have to punch them.
They do
so hard.
Yes.
They are wedged. They're like, all of the like Sulu's like, oh, phaser banks fire, click click click.
When the phrase punch a button, this is why. Like you,
yeah, this is why. Like, when Pike says punch it, it's literal.
It's amazing.
And I love the little white nozzle that's on Kirk's chair that's for the communicator, and Spock was like, click! It's like a big fucking lever.
I also like the evolution of the Enterprise changing this episode. Every time we went back to the Enterprise, it was very evident that Spock and the crew were actively making progress on solving the mystery or solving the problem of how to do anything. Communicate was number one. We got to figure out how to communicate. And then it was fire through the hand, you know. And things were changing in that engine room or in the on the bridge. Not engine, sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. The bridge. I apologize.
Don't do it.
Every single time we visited. And that was so clever because they didn't have to do a lot. You know, mm-hmm. It's just different positions. And then even the person that was sitting by Sulu, there's just a quick moment. It's a totally new, like little, I don't even know what you'd call it. Like a little mobile extra console.
Yes. Yeah.
That
yeah,
is
yeah,
suddenly
yeah.
there. And it's barely even like they don't even pay attention to it too much. But as Spock goes to hand his massive paperwork to the guy, he's like, hey, like Sulu turns to that person beside him and says, like, let's recalibrate this, or what, he says something. And that's all it is. And it's just like, oh, they're really trying to solve the problem. And that guy like nods and he starts to compute on his little thing.
I love that.
It was
that.
So
just
believable.
How much fun is it to like build that set and then take it apart and like find the guts of it? And it gives you so much depth to, we are on a spaceship. We're not on a set. We are on a working spaceship with wires that do things. This ship can actually do the things that they're telling us it can do, because yeah. It's such a detailed set and there's so much character to it. I love the circuit boards that
it's
are her.
It's so fun.
It's such a short scene, like mm-hmm. of her with her head in it.
Yeah.
But those circuit boards are so detailed. There's so much going on in there. It wasn't just a few flashing lights. Like, I feel like it outdoes some of the stuff we see in TNG. Like, there's so much wires and buttons going on in there. I love it. So it is one of my favorite things. Like, when I think of TOS, the thing that brings me back is being on the Enterprise and listening yeah. to the sounds
yeah.
and looking at how everything changes and gets moved around.
It is the reason I would say that I enjoyed this episode, is because yeah. I get to see the crew doing interesting things. Like the motivation for this episode, the relationship drama, that kind of stuff, I'm out. But the way that the crew is handling a problem is interesting. And that's kind of how I have to look at this is a problem. And even Kirk, you know, leading the away team, coming up with
the next... I love the way he leads in this episode.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I liked how he was like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to try this. And just trying to come up with, okay, so if this person is actually a god, this is how it makes sense. And it just, I believed all of that. It wasn't like this was an unbelievable episode. This was the kind of episode that the dialogue and the motivation of the bad guy and one of the crew members just leaves a sour taste in your mouth. But does that mean that the episode is bad? No, it doesn't. It means it's uncomfortable. And I yeah. don't think that we should shy away from uncomfortable things. This is one of the reasons why I'm still open to Jadzia and Worf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I've got an episode that'll kill that for you.
But
kill it dead.
But what an interesting idea. You're flying through space. A giant hand stops you because a god wants you to worship them. And then both people are trying to figure out how to communicate. Like, it was a great episode.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable, but it was great.
In general, people do like this episode. Like, it is, yeah. among fans, it is well, like, kind of received. I don't know if loved is the right word, but it is. And the person I would recommend this to is the completionist. Is the person yeah. that likes TOS and wants to get through all of it. Like, this is one you have to watch for The Green Hand, for Michael Forrest.
Right.
And it's kind of like, just, we know there's some bad stuff with the female portrayal and that kind of stuff in this episode.
Yeah, I think you're right. That is the answer, is that when you're thinking about TOS, there's going to be certain episodes that are almost like on the must-see wheel. And yeah, this is probably, you know, one of them. I wouldn't have known that because I wasn't...
Of course not.
I'm not aware of which ones are the most popular, but the fact that people cosplay as a ship and then have a hand somewhere,
oh my gosh,
is so silly.
Yeah.
And I adore
it's incredible.
That.
You're wearing an Enterprise with the hand on it, or they'll be it's the amazing. Hand and just holding a little ship of the Enterprise. So they're in just completely normal clothing, but they've painted their hand green and they're holding a model ship.
Oh my God.
Like, it would be, I know what you're cosplaying as.
How funny would it be if you were dressed as Apollo with a green hand,
yes,
holding a ship.
Oh,
like,
beautiful.
Go the next level.
I'm going to get my Apollo body on. There's a couple of other things I just wanted to mention. This has a really great title. This is a really clever title.
Yeah, let's talk about what Adonis means, because Adonis definitely didn't make an appearance in the episode.
Nope. So it's referring to a poem by Percy Shelley, which was basically about the death of John Keats. And like the crux of it is, she was kind of taking shots at people who critiqued his work. So this title kind of lies into that. Who are we to critique the work of a god? Adonis is a metaphor for Keats. There's another layer to it, which is really great, which is Adonai is the Hebrew word for god.
Oh, okay.
And when you stick the S on the end, it's Adonis. Ah. So who mourns for the gods? So it's not just who's mourning for Apollo or Adonis. It's who mourns for the gods in general,
right,
now that we don't worship them anymore,
right,
and that they aren't a part of our lives.
Nobody.
So it's
I don't
really
fucking care about
clever. Exactly. It's really clever on a few different levels.
I'm all powerful. Oh, how sad.
What a shame. What a shame. You need me to worship you as well as have all your god powers?
Oh.
Well, that sucks.
Like, how different would this episode have been if he hadn't have been so aggressive?
Yeah.
And they really had to kind of go, we have to destroy this creature's power, otherwise we're going to be enslaved. But I think that would have taken 2 hours to develop, you know. But it's an interesting
concept. I will cure Mbenga's daughter.
Right.
You guys have to stay with me, right?
Oh, shit.
Uh-huh. Before we get into the sins, how do you feel about your predictions and how I pulled this episode out of what you said? The big hand killed me in the lilac dress in the courtyard.
I don't remember if I said lilac specifically, but
you
I
said lilac dress.
Oh, that's amazing. Well,
it's incredible.
It had everything that I saw. And even sometimes
the fruit. The damn fruit was on the table.
Well, it was weird because I'm the only one that knows what I like, the picture in my imagination.
Mm-hmm.
What I should do is I should draw some stuff and then show you so that it's like proof that. But the courtyard was really interesting because the taller trees is part of what I had seen in my imagination.
That's amazing.
So I was like, wow, that's really, really close. And then the hand thing freaked me out.
Right?
I was like a little
and
my God.
That's the one, that's what, you can be as cynical as you like.
It was
but
a huge
even,
hand.
Like, as me, that's the one, but I was like, you can't fake that because that has nothing to do with Grecian garb. It's just that open hand pushed me over the edge.
Here's what freaks me out is sometimes my own predictions scare me. This is one that scares me a little bit, I'm not going to lie. But there was a moment in my imagination where I saw a really, really big hand, and it was so big that I was like, oh, that must be like in the foreground of the shot. Like somebody falls down and their hand is like really close to the camera or something like that because of the way that the hand was positioned. I just assumed that they were on their side.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like exactly what this episode was, but
no, but what was weird is that I only saw the part that we see. And so when I saw it on holding the ship, that's almost exactly the position of the hand that I saw in my imagination. So it was really freaky, and I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
We should stop doing the prediction game.
We just did one. It's a one-off episode.
Yeah.
We
no,
did
this
a little
is two.
Experiment.
This is the second
it was
one.
Too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's so great. Well, before we head into sins, what are your pips?
I should use my powers for something. Like,
you should use it for something useful.
I should turn into a god.
Correct.
Myself.
Yes.
When I run it through all the filters that I run to kind of almost excuse it from some of the messages that I feel like it might be sending that it shouldn't send.
Yeah.
I think this is a 3. And here's why. I really, really enjoyed the way that the crew was interacting with the enemy. And even though it was a little bit too much enemy for me, I think I understand why, because at the time, this would be a really interesting thought for the audience of like this Greek mythology and how maybe it was real. And listening to him talk and listening to him speak, I think was important for these characters to be really believe that he was going to do harm to them, because if they had cut that down, I don't know that it would have been as believable. Like, we kind of saw him be crazy from the beginning. Yeah. Like, that
we
gotta never stopped.
See him kick the shit out of Scott.
It wasn't Scotty. Like they. It wasn't like he started off nice. Apollo didn't start off nice and have a couple curious moments. Like, from the beginning, he was scary, and they were just trying to figure out how to get out. And we got to see different characters. Like, I don't think I usually get to see Chekhov very much.
So this is only he wasn't in any of season one, and that's where most of our episodes have been.
Oh, okay.
Because it's where the best ones are. He doesn't appear until season two, episode one. So this is the second episode we would have seen him in.
A 22-year-old.
22-year-old Pavel Chekhov.
Amazing.
So fun.
I liked the crew. You can kind of feel they're in season two and like comfortable.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And I liked that. And I loved seeing Spock in the captain's chair and how they were going about solving the problems. And I don't know. This is one, again, I don't know that I would recommend it. But if the completionist thing is true, you're going to come across it. And
you should watch
it. I want to dock it for some of what I endured, because I am a woman. And some of the things that were said were like, Jesus Christ. But I try to put that aside and kind of go, okay, this is kind of just what happens. It's like,
it's going to sound strange considering how much we shit upon it at the beginning, but I'm with you at three. Like, I do give a lot of grace to the original series for that tropey female role stuff, because a lot of it was what was wanted on TV as well, or what was perceived to be wanted on TV. A lot of the TV at the time was still damsel in distress, and I want to give some grace to the conversations that were happening at the time and what the intent was and how it hasn't aged 50 years later.
Right.
At the heart of it, I still really enjoy this episode. I love Michael Forrest. Like you said, I love Spock on the Enterprise as well. I actually really like Kirk's leadership in this episode and how that's put together. So yeah, overall, it's a fun episode. It's just hard to recommend, mainly because of that first scene with Kirk, Scotty, and McCoy. Like, that's what I would dock an entire 2 points just for that.
Yeah, I think you start it like a few minutes in and you'll be fine. Skip that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just have her beam down as the expert. I don't even need that initial scene with Scotty.
You know what it kind of feels like is sometimes when I'll watch a show, I feel like they kind of make a joke at the beginning, knowing that like a woman is going to be more present. So they'll do like a low jab joke so that if there is any tender egos out there that don't want to see a woman, it's like, well, they already kind of like did a joke, so it's okay. They got her. So now I can watch the rest of it, because it's really out of place. And
it is.
Anyway.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Okay. With that, let's head over to engineering to do some sins. Battle stations, red alert.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Warning, warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sim brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows have outseen even our beloved Star Trek. Go for it, Ambassador.
Man, my biggest sin is why they didn't just go down the lane and try to find her. Like, why did they stay at the pavilion for so long? The away team, when she leaves, they didn't even try to search for her at all.
I mean, initially Kirk is like, I can almost imagine Kirk saying, well, if she was a man, we wouldn't be following her. And he's kind of believes that she's doing some reconnaissance and is like, she's doing her job, she'll be okay. We don't need to be overprotective. But when it gets towards the end and she's screaming in the fucking forest, I'm like, go and get her.
It's just like, we don't know where she is. Like, well, have you even tried to leave the pavilion yet? Because I haven't seen you leave this really interesting set that they created.
Yep. My biggest one is that when they have that initial hand grabbing and the Enterprise is stopped dead in its tracks. And then it's McCoy, I think, that says we have five injuries. That is a lie, because I think a dozen actual actors died in the beginning of that scene when they are launched across the bridge. I'm not even saying that the characters survived that. I'm saying that the actors that threw themselves across the bridge survived it. Like, they commit more than any other series to launching their bodies when that ship is under attack. Like, Picard will have, like, a bit of a chair wobble. Maybe Riker will fall down. These guys are yeeted. They are gone. There were injuries that day. I'm sure of it.
Kneecaps just totally displaced.
Severed arms. Concussions.
Children no longer to be had.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
My next one is the, you know, the show wants us to believe that Apollo is this, like, you know, can create life, can do all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But then he says to Kirk, okay, I want you to make plans to bring your crew down. It's like, well, you could do that.
You come on, Apollo. It kind of, you bring them down.
Took away some of his power, and maybe that's intentional. But the fact that Kirk didn't catch that, or like no one caught, like, you've been saying that you can do whatever you want. You can create life if you want to. So why not? If you want everybody down here, then get everybody down here.
I like that he has limits, but that's my next sin as well, is that Apollo is all powerful and a god, but not really.
Right.
Like, he almost yeah, does exactly. feel a bit too limited. He's like, I could pop you out of existence and bring you back again. Like, the amount of energy it takes to create human beings and life on a planet is big, and they exhaust it by shouting at him. And, like, a few lightning bolts. So it does feel a bit odd that he doesn't have more power. And maybe it's because it's more powerful if they're willing and they come down willingly. But you've tricked them into being there. Nobody's willing in this situation, if that's how it works.
Yeah. My next one isn't necessarily a dig, because we went into a lot of the sexism already. But there was this one moment where Kirk gives his speech to Carolyn and, you know, give me your hand, feel that human flesh against human flesh, we're the same. And he goes on to be like, your duty lies in the rest of humanity. Do you understand that? And mm-hmm. she says, yes, sir, my orders and my duty. And then she gets up and she kind of forlornly walks away. And I kind of got stuck on that in my head for a minute, and then I had to, like, put it out of my brain because I was watching the show. But it's a really interesting idea that, you know, women and men too, but people are mm-hmm. sometimes told to put aside their desires because they have a duty and a responsibility to something bigger.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about that being a powerful statement for a woman, it might be that, well, she's a scientist, she is a professional, she has a desire of her own, and she's having to put that aside to become a goddess. But that's not what the show went for. It went for her having this sad puppy dog walk away when she realized that she couldn't be a dominating goddess.
Yeah.
And I just, like, that line, my orders and my duty, could be so powerful out of the words of a woman if it was the other choice. But it wasn't. It was the. Nope. It was that she couldn't fall in love with Apollo, and I just want to sin that moment.
I'm with you, and that ties into Kirk's argument just not being very convincing for me. Like, it's a pretty weak speech in terms of captain speeches for me. It relies on, you're a human, don't betray your humans. And there's so many angles to come at that from. You don't have to specify human versus God. Like, that doesn't have to come into it. It's right versus wrong. And it's the lives of 150 versus your sudden and inexplicable love for this person. So, yeah, it's a very frustrating Kirk speech for me.
Yeah, yeah. It has like a ring true to it somewhere, but it's kind of like this.
It sounds great. It's like, but when you dig into it. Wait.
What are we saying?
You're saying
here?
That passionately, but that doesn't mean it's right. You're saying it with conviction, but I don't buy it. Chekhov, just to get right into a silly sin, Chekhov does some incredibly terrible tricordering.
Oh.
Did you see him? If you've watched this episode, go back and rewatch this scene. When they beam down to Pavlos 4, whatever it's called, Pollux 4, he whips out his tricorder, and you can tell it's the first time the actor, Walter Koenig, has ever used this before. He's just like waving it up and down, left to right. He's going crazy with this thing. No readings are being taken. He's just waving it. And then when you pan over to Scotty, he's using it correctly because he's been doing this for over a year. Just very still, just slight movements. And Chekhov is just like, oh, yeeting this thing up and down. Dad, use your toys properly.
Yeah. It was fun. I really like watching Kirk use the tricorder thingy, whatever it is.
The communicator,
it's so
every
fun.
Time.
I love it.
And then change hands, wiggle with the other nipple.
It's so great.
And then flip it
and
back
then
down.
He has to tuck it in his ass crack. It's perfect.
He broke so many of those.
Sure.
He violently flip it open.
Well, yeah,
they actually make a joke about it in one of the Star Trek movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Chris Pine flips it open and the lid flies off into the distance. And he's because it's broken.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So good. Scotty has some interesting character choices in this episode. He just like shoots Apollo. Like, just he takes mild offense at Carolyn being taken away. And draws a gun on the alien and just fires. Mm-hmm. Comes at him with a fucking candelabra.
After being told not to.
After being told not to do it. Like, Scotty is unhinged in this episode. His boner is real.
He really wants to go have coffee, okay?
He needs that coffee. I think he's had too much coffee.
My next one is when they destroy the pavilion and everything kind of calms down, they don't just immediately beam the fuck out of there.
Oh, Spock should be beam them up as soon as they can.
It should be the first thing. But instead, they kind of want to see like, okay, how much damage did we do to you emotionally?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. There's just...
check on that first.
You don't know. Maybe there's a backup power reserve. This is your one shot to get out of there. Now, I realized that we wouldn't then get to see Apollo crying, and that was how they wanted to end this episode. But how much better would it be if they did that from the bridge and they all... teleported or beamed,
yeah,
transported.
He could have done it on the view screen.
Back on, yeah, get it on the view screen, and all the crew is just like, "Hey, Carolyn, what's going on with your garb there, babe?
Yeah, what happened?
I fell in love with an alien, and I can't go live my life and be a goddess and have slaves."
You were gone for 59 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Oops. This is such a dumb sin, but Apollo's tiny nipple has always distracted me, even when I was
so
a kid.
So tiny.
A tiny nipple that I think they've like put foundation over, so that it may just be a tanning. It may just be how Michael Forrest is. I'll never know. I mean, I might never know, but it looks like it's been blended in, and it was always very distracting to me that his nipple wasn't very visible and was very tiny.
Wow.
But yeah.
You know, some people's nipples just don't look like yours, Ian.
I think everything should look like me. But yeah, always distracted me, and that's just the 10-year-old Ian that wants to share a sin that he wrote a long, long time ago.
There you go.
And there you go. But he is a specimen of a man. He's a beautiful, beautiful man. Apollo's tiny nipple should have been the title of this episode.
That really should be it. I was really bummed that I didn't get to see, I think this is my final sin, was the men not being in garb as well.
Well, it's interesting you say that. There is another episode that is Grecian in theme, and I believe they do get dressed up in that episode. That is not an episode we will be watching.
Okay.
I was so glad you said Big Hand, because it steered me away from that episode and into this one.
Okay.
Yeah. My last sin is that Spock's resolution is to blow it up. I would love there to be a more Star Trek-y ending to this. As much as I love that finale and the tension and the drama and the music and it's stop, it's great. Blow it up is a pretty not Star Trek way to end the episode. Let's just destroy the power source. So it's a little bit, I love the climax, but it's thematically anticlimactic.
Yeah. I wish there would have been more of a point made about Spock / Pan really making a shit yeah. life for Apollo.
Right. I wish he'd beamed down and just like ruined him.
Yeah. If he beamed down and then just flipped him off.
Yeah. That would be amazing. I want to see Spock flip someone off so bad. Do you have anything to say to that, Spock?
We have to have it like that's a racist sin in this one too for Apollo just being like, you're not invited. Yeah. Don't bring the one with the pointy ears because he's much like Pan, and Pan bored me. No sad faces.
That's racist. No sad faces. So serious. Okay, with that, I'm glad we watched that episode. That gave us so much to talk about. That was so interesting. I don't know that it's one that I would have ever picked, which is why this The way that we're picking the episodes at the minute is so much fun because we're getting some really interesting stuff happen. And with that, let's dive into Danae's brain and pick another one if she's prepared.
Oh no, I'm scared.
Accessing library computer data.
My mind to your mind.
Vulcans never bluff.
Okay, crew, it's time to test my trekdom as we dive into Danae's brain for next week's episode. Ambassador, do I give you a prompt again?
Okay, I'm going to give you something and then maybe you give me something.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, the first thing I see, it's very clearly a TNG. Now, this doesn't mean we have to pick TNG, but I'm just going to tell you like what I'm seeing.
The style, okay.
Yeah. And it's like whenever they're trying to explain what's going on in space, and so you're looking at the panel on the wall.
Okay.
And the visual is top. We're like looking at it from above down, and then it shifts. We're looking at it from the side, and it appears to be like a spiral going down, like a whirlpool from the top, and then it shifts down, and it looks more like a little tornado. But it's on the TNG screen as if like there's a ship maybe that's going to fly into it, or they're like evaluating something. And so that's the first thing I see.
Mm.
Yeah, they're scanning something, and something's out there in space, and when you look at it from above, it's like a circle. And then when you look at it from the side, it looks like a vortex.
Oh God! Okay, let me do a bit of Googling.
Is there only one option at this point? Like,
There's only one option that I can think of. I can't remember exactly if this happens on like the TNG screen.
Yeah.
But what you've described of the Enterprise,
it feels like it's like going into something or getting sucked into something.
Yeah, that image. I just did some Googling to confirm the image I was thinking of existed, and it is in the episode that I'm thinking of. It is the Enterprise going down into a vortex. Now, I know they talk about it in the conference room. I don't know if Geordi brings up a visual of it or not. I think he does.
That's okay.
But it's 100% a spirally tornado thing. Next week's episode is going to be Time Squared, which just happens to be one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. Okay.
This is season 2, episode 13, Time Squared. This is genuinely one of my favorites. This is a fun, an episode I almost picked for the time travel series, but it's not like top tier, but personally, there's so much in this episode that I love, and it's going to be a great conversation starter as well. So yeah, next week's episode, based on the prompt that Danae has pulled from her brain, will be Time Squared. Yeah, that's fun. Any further thoughts now that I've given you the title?
Well, I feel like it's really difficult for me to do any predictions at this point because I know TNG, so like I can't be like, I see a mammoth visor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's going to be a Klingon and they're going to ignore him.
I'm kind of relieved that I don't have anything super specific because I freaked myself out. So I like that I just had like one idea and then we're just going with
there's
it.
There's one image that's going to freak you out. I guarantee it. It may not be on like, I mean, if it happens to be on the view screen, I can't remember, like on like the conference room screen, that will freak you out. But even when you see this image, when it actually happens to the Enterprise, I think it'll freak you out. And I know we haven't seen this episode together, so that's amazing. Okay, love that. Next week's episode, Time Squared, season 2, episode 13. Thank you for joining us this week. We hope you had a blast. Apologies if you hated the episode. I'm sure you loved the show instead.
Right, yes. But yeah. Of course, yeah, that's it.
Send any emails, anything you want us to mention on the show, captainspod@cinemasins.com. Join all of the lovely Star Trekkies that we have in the CinemaSins world at discord.gg/cinemasins. And until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and I can think of no one better suited for the job than you, Miss Uhura.
Aww.
I before we even talked about that, that was my end quote.
And it's insults are effective only where emotion is present.
I love
me.
It. That's so you. I love it. Live long and Podspur.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
What are you?
I was watching shorts because I have a brain problem.
I have a brain problem too.
I now have to watch shorts. And I'm trying to, whenever an ad comes up, come out of the app. I'm trying to train the algorithm to not send me ads.
Good luck. Good
hey, he
luck.
Quits whenever an advert comes on. Stop yeah. sending him adverts.
No, I think they'll just get more clever with it. We need yeah. to do something else. Send him one with boobs.
Well, you know me so well. That'll keep me on the TikToks.
I had a male friend who was off of Instagram for a long time and decided to restart his Instagram.
Mm.
And when he started his Instagram, the first thing that he got was an entire genre of women who are like breastfeeding, pretend babies, so they okay. can show their boobs.
Right. Okay, yeah, I see it. Yeah.
And he was like, I don't know how.
Why was that the number
Instagram
one?
Instagram decided that this is where I need to restart.
He ticked the mailbox. That's all he did.
It's like, you're a male, so let's show you some tits.
Immediate boobs.
And the best way to do that is ones that are breastfeeding a baby, because the algorithm sees the pretend baby and thinks that it's like, well, they're breastfeeding, so it's okay.
I don't.
But then if you click their profile, you know, they're like, you know, making their money on
sexual,
OnlyFans.
Though.
It's not, and it's creating, I'm sure, a very confusing problem.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is how Homelander got his issues.
Yeah, exactly. That's an interesting pathway that we're allowing to be created. Oh, gosh. I was going to say, do we want to talk about how the goat has become a legend
in the
town?
Yeah, we absolutely should give a little update there.
Uh-huh. I have a little update about the land and the goat that I let free.
My favorite part of learning this update, we were having lunch with my homesteading friends who came to the city.
Mm, they did come to the city. That sounds so patronizing. They've lived in cities before. They know the city.
Well, yeah, they know the city, but they don't like it.
No, I don't like it.
But there's a big bags of cat food in the city.
Yeah, there is, at discount prices.
Mm-hmm. So I loved meeting up with them for lunch, and they asked about my wound, if it was healing correctly. And I still have like evidence, strong evidence on my
epidermis.
Skin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has definitely not fully healed. Mm-hmm. I have a red, I don't know if it's going to scar, but it's still healing for sure. And I was talking about how I feel like I had an epic moment, and I went from city girl to one badge on the farm girl. Like, I got one badge.
Yeah.
And it felt epic. And they said, yeah, you want to know how epic it was? We went to how did they word it? We went to the gas station, which in a small town is like the hub of activity.
It's the one, yeah.
And they're talking to the clerk, who was one of their friends. Like, hey, sorry we didn't get to see you at the barbecue. And the gas station attendant said, oh man, I heard it was so great. Like, it was a great barbecue. And then behind them is this old man with his beer.
Who they did not know.
They did not know. Who said, oh, are you guys the ones that had that great barbecue where the goat got out?
oh no,
it is the talk of the town. Everyone knew. They were so emphatic. They're like, Danae, everyone in the town knows about the goat.
They know about
just
the goat
overnight.
Getting out. I know how it happened, because I imagine it's the guy that brought them the two goats,
right,
who they purchased it from.
Yes.
Of course he's going to share that story. It gets shared again and again and again. Eventually it hits the entire population of 14 people, and you become a legend.
Yeah. Let's just put it into context. We're not talking about a town that's like 5,000 people.
No.
This is a small... In fact, I'm going to look up the how the population of the city.
I'm going to guess 3,205.
Oh, you think so?
Yes.
I'm thinking it's more like 500.
Oh, okay, cool. Not quite in the dozens, but under 1,000.
Okay, let's take a look. Okay, in 2022,
oh no,
919 people.
Oh, I was way off. Wow, why does that place have a name?
I think if you have a post office, I think you have a name.
That's more important than the
people.
I think
that's kind of how
that's
it works.
That's amazing. So we are statistically, we are known among the 900 people as the ones that let the goat out.
We have not been famous before this story.
Nope. It's amazing. That is a lower circulation than our podcast.
More people listen to our podcast than live in this little town.
That's amazing. There was one other thing as well. We should probably give an update about the hammock that we left behind.
Okay, first of all, there's a couple of things about these stories that I feel like I just need, even if it's just between me and you, I guess.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You were not 100% responsible for the goat getting out.
I wasn't. I wasn't.
You are not not responsible for the hammock.
Not even close.
Causing children to be injured.
Nope. Not even that close to being my fault.
We left it there, but it still needs to be maintained and checked by the people.
And used properly, which I guarantee it was not being used properly.
We did not use it properly the first time. We are such city folk.
You swung me on it. That's why I fell out. And I guarantee that's what happened. There were four kids and they swang. There's no way that thing had four kids in it and no swinging happens. Kids swing on stationary park benches. So there's no way a hammock. That was way too tempting.
I don't think you're wrong.
I'm imagining like 360, like complete swings.
We learned some valuable lessons that day.
Move rocks.
Just about the hammock. Exactly.
Yeah.
I've never thought of it before.
Oh my gosh.
I just got a hammock. I saw that it was on sale for like Walmart. I was like, you know what? Sure. I'll take a hammock.
Great
with
contribution
me.
To the land. Genuinely.
There are trees.
Yeah.
That we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to set it up and obviously fail. You fall.
Mm-hmm. Narrowly miss a rock in my ass.
And it was upon reflection that we realized that the first thing, besides finding the great spot, I guess, so find your great spot, but then also clear the debris underneath the hammock.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
I've never thought about that before. City folk, we don't need hammocks. We're going to tie it between two lampposts. Street lamps. Sorry. But yeah, we were informed that the second that they turned up...
The children?
The homesteading friends who remaining anonymous. The first thing he said was, Ian, I need to talk to you about your hammock attaching skills and how it nearly killed a child.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So a child did, the hammock had collapsed while there were children in it.
And the child fell onto a sharp rock.
Yeah.
And then the three siblings fell on the child that was already on the hard rock. So it was not great.
In the leg, not like the head or like kidney or something.
No, because he was laughing about it. So it wasn't super serious.
All the kids are fine. No kids were harmed in the making of this hammock.
But I'm sure you were blamed for it in the moment. I'm sure it's like, well, the Englishman set it up. So what does he know?
I'm sure the entire town knows about it. Oh, you're the guy that nearly killed that kid?
900 some people.
They all know. Yeah.
Know that you can't be trusted with just about anything.
I can. Hammocks don't knots do not like lateral movement. They don't. They go up and down. They don't like being side to side unless they're designed to do that.
To be fair, I don't know how to do. We really did not tie it very intently.
No, I did. 100%. You didn't have anything to do with it. I tied it. You didn't go near these knots. You left. After it fell... Then I changed the knots and I found tree nubbins for it to clamp down onto. And then I even adjusted it so that there was an incline so that the blood didn't run away from our feet. Because I got in there and I started getting pins and needles because my legs were too elevated.
Oh, the problems with going out in nature.
That's why you don't. Don't do it. Stay in and listen to podcasts and watch Star Trek, people. Okay, let's do it.
Ready.
Captain Spot, Stardate 15-61-44. Ooh, nope, because we were going to record on Friday, and it is now not Friday anymore. It is Monday. Captain Spot, Stardate 15...
Oh my god. Wow.
My cough is not gone yet.
Uh-huh. Touch me.
That needs explaining.
Touch me.
That needs explaining, Danae.
That's the animal song.
Touch me.
Started with a cat. Mm-hmm. And that's now the dog song. And when they want to have pets, that's what they sing to me in my imagination.
And now
Touch me.
And now
touch
Iris.
Touch me.
And now Iris actually sings it to you.
Yes, she does.
Do you realize that you, I love it when you do this, you accidentally quote a movie almost perfectly. You just quoted the bad guy Bison from Street Fighter, like almost word for word. It was so great.
What do you mean? What did I say?
There's a character that I think, I can't remember which character it is, but she basically says, you came through my village, you destroyed my life, you killed my family, and that's why I'm so angry at you. And his response is, for you, the day I graced your village was the most important day of your life, but for me, it was Tuesday.
It was a Tuesday. Yes.
And you're just like, all the days of the week. You picked Tuesday. That was amazing.
Tuesday seems to be one of the most bland days.
Yeah, it's one of the most meh days. It doesn't have like the drama of being Monday.
Thursday is too exciting because Friday is coming up.
Yeah.
So Tuesday seems to be like the easy.
Yeah.
Nothing happens on a Tuesday.
To me, it was Tuesday. I love that.
TOS beam.
TOS. Oh, no, stop it. Yeah, no, I'll do it. I really like the TOS beaming
sound. Oh, the one that lasts 7 days.
The one that lasts, 7 minutes from the cage.
Okay,
yeah.
Listen, if we're going to be beaming TOS style, let me go ahead and get my knitting so that I can finish this fucking sweater before we get to wherever we're going.
Yeah. It's so great. It was such an event. It was such an event to have them beam down. I don't like the Discovery tap, tap, shing. It's over so quick.
Says the man who watches shorts all the time.
Shut up. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's right that I watch shorts.
One was in the air where it's like, ooh, a knob is twisting. And in the new era, it's just like, let's just fucking go.
Yep, ching, ching, ding. Gone.
Let's go already.
How does this sound like the future? It's quicker.
It's quicker. What?
Hi.
Look in your viewer. What the hell is that? That is a giant hand. What the fuck?